with y'all. Go ahead and have a seat. And I think we'll get Sandra, wherever Sandra's at. Come on up. And then Marita after Sandra.
Good morning, everybody. I just want to encourage those that were not here last week, because I was not. I was actually out celebrating our 35th wedding anniversary, so we had a good weekend. But I was able to watch yesterday on YouTube the service, and I was deeply touched just watching the service. So I encourage you, if you weren't here, watch it, see what God is doing, and be open for Him to touch you while you watch it. So I announced to you guys a couple weeks ago that we are going to go back to Kenya in May. We actually have our airline tickets. We're leaving May 21st. Our prayers are our visas to come through, because we do not have those yet. There's some little hiccups when we try to apply for them, so we need some more paperwork and documents to prove everything that we're doing. So just prayers that our visas come through. I do want to let you know how to do this. I guess what I'll tell you first is I told you that the Father's Delight is actually growing. That's the ministry that we're going to, and the school is growing. So, Ben, if you want to show that. Oh, I'm looking that way. So, the first phase that we want to do is complete the chapel with floors, doors, and windows. So that building right there is actually their chapel building. You see there are no doors, and there are no windows. And the floor is... it wasn't dirt, but because we actually swept it out, it was some kind of concrete, but it was very, very rough. So what we would like to do is to, at least for phase one, is to get this building completed for the school. That way, as they are growing, and she's actually adding another grade, and they can use this building in the meantime for that, for the third grade. Then phase two is to add a four-block classroom, which is approximately 175 feet by 26 feet for grades 3, 4, 5, and 6, which would cost $10,500. So we would never be able to build a building that size for that price. The labor alone, what was it? It was only $1,500, I think. It wasn't much, the labor. So if anybody has any questions, I actually have a breakdown of all of it, where the money would actually go, and nails, roofing, all that kind of stuff. And then phase three would eventually to add a dining hall, or $7,200. So if God moves on your heart to contribute to that, I'd appreciate that. You can give it to Bridge of Hope, and then we will get it to them. So so that will be ongoing. Hopefully we can have that before we go in May, for the phase one at least. I do need to... I have not informed the team of this, but yesterday the president of Kenya made a national announcement that they are actually in a, what they're calling a wave three. So the coronavirus is hitting them really hard in their major cities. And we want prayer. As of now, he has not closed international travel. It is still open, because we all have to go in with a negative COVID test anyway. But our prayer is that the window will still remain open, that he will not close the borders. And for us to travel out of the city is another step that we have to get a letter and all of this exemption stuff, which we're trusting that God will bring that all through for us. So we have faith that he's going before us. He's opened up the window and the door, so... we're just walking through them, and hopefully it will happen. So appreciate the prayers for that, and for us to stay healthy, and for the virus there just to be eradicated there. Thanks.
That's so exciting. Wow. Wow.
Good morning again, if I didn't say you already. So good to see all your faces here today. We have a... a local opportunity tomorrow night. Those of you, women, girls, the Heart to Heart Pregnancy Resource Center that's in Eagle River, the strip mall by Mike's Meats, Subway, they're right in there. They've contacted me and asked if we had any women. They've been blessed with lots of donations, and she's a little overwhelmed, and she put her back out. So she said, hey, you got any women that can come Monday night and just help sort, organize, you know, that kind of stuff. So I said, I will throw it out there and see what we can do for you. So if you can help for an hour or two, contact me, and we'll see how we can serve in our community tomorrow night. Other things coming up. How many of you enjoyed our breakfast share dish and are so happy we are able to do those again? So our April one is coming up on the 11th. We don't have a theme, so just bring whatever yummy stuff you want to make. It'll be following the service. It's not a breakfast. So Sunday, April 11th, bring some food, and we'll have a great time together after the service in the gym. We'll be needing a little setup the day before, so if you're available on Saturday the 10th to set up, contact me and we'll organize a time where we can have everything ready for you, because everybody's really hungry after church, and it's great just to leave from the word and the service and go right in there and have things as ready as possible to get eating as soon as possible. Also, I'm excited about our next Women of Hope, which will be April 17th. It's a Saturday night. I'm still looking this way. Wow, gotta change that. So love to have all you women come. It's at my house. If you have questions or need directions, contact me and I'll help you with that. The Hope for Kids. Did you guys notice the banner out here today? And there's also a cool tote thing, container, to drop your donations off. If it's more convenient for you to do that rather than bring them in the church. But the date is now changed. We are going to have it on May 8th. So we've extended it so you have more opportunity to bring the diapers, the wipes, the clothes, all of that in, and we'll get it all ready and then open it up May 8th to the community. So that'll be good stuff coming.
Okay, really quick. We have two things coming up that are really exciting. Tomorrow night at Real Life Church, Edna DeVries, if you could put the slide up tomorrow night, this is not tomorrow night, but tomorrow night she is at Real Life Church. She is doing a come meet and greet Edna. Mayor Edna DeVries is our mayor out in Palmer, and it's for teenagers and young people. It's going to be pizza night where she just pours into the young people and they can ask questions, and it's an amazing opportunity, and we want our young people to be inspired to run after whatever it is their call is. So this is coming up here at Bridge of Hope, April 7th at 7 p.m., which is a Wednesday. Mayor Edna is coming to speak here, and she has an amazing, amazing testimony of just saying yes and God taking her piece by piece through and into government. So everybody should come. It's going to be amazing.
And then just one last thing. We're doing the Constitution Alive class. This is the third of six, and it's not too late to come on down and jump in and see what's going on. So that's it, and I believe we're ready to let the kids go, and we can meet and greet a little bit.
Hello. I have a testimony too as well. So, back to the hope sign. So just so you know, when Sage nicely planted the seed in me, she didn't like jam it in, whatever. So when I was building the sign, I did it in the gym, and I put a big piece of Visqueen out. And I don't know if you can tell, but there's a lot of glitter on that. It's a glitter paint. We sprayed it on, and so there was glitter all over the Visqueen. That's why it's not on the gym floor. But so fast forwarded till yesterday. I've had that Visqueen folded up in my shop. And so I'm building a workout room for my family. And it literally was. So just DIY, when you're putting laminate flooring on concrete, you have to put a Visqueen barrier on it. Just remember to do that if you do that, because concrete wicks water. So if you didn't do it, don't feel bad. But anyhow, so I put it down, and I had glitter all over me, and my boys were helping me, and they had glitter all over them, and so we had hope glitter all over us. But going back is, so if God didn't give the seed of it to Sage, and Sage gave it to me, and then the person writing the letter back, and then Zach saying something, it was just kind of like, I was just like, didn't even think about it yesterday. It was like when Zach said something, I was like, hey, I'm going to be working out on Hope's Glitter. So back to what Zach was saying is you don't know when you say something to somebody what will spark in them. I was actually thinking this morning, I was shoveling off some snow off my walkway, and I was thinking about some shows that it's like the answer for the world is, oh, go see a psychiatrist for their answers. And I'm like, it's like that's the ultimate answer. It's like, oh, you need to find out what's going on inside you. And I'm like, no. You know, God is our comforter. He's our counselor. But He's in every one of you. So you have the counselor in you. And so when you don't say something, or when you don't act upon that obedience of saying something, you don't know what that's going to spark, that seed to keep carrying. So it went full circle. Was Sage planted in me, I did the sign went out to the neighbor, Zach said something to Zach, and then went back to me and administered me. That is my hope as well. It's not just, I built that sign for the hope for the world. It's not just an old presidential slogan. The world has tried to steal what really hope is. So that's not just the world's hope, it's my hope as well. It's your hope.
Love that. It's awesome. Thank you.
Sir, hello. So I was kind of trying to figure out what I felt like the Lord wanted me to share on this week, and I was pretty sure I was going to be going down the Passover road, and I'd like to. I just feel like the Lord told me to do something different yesterday. So, I quick synopsis of Passover. Jesus. There. I'm not trying to take anything away from it, but Jesus is absolutely the Passover. Everything about it points to Jesus. And if you don't know anything about what I'm talking about, it's way too lengthy for me to get into right now. If you've never experienced like a Passover celebration, Passover dinner, you're missing out. It's a lot of fun. It's intriguing. It's stimulating to learn about and awesome to see how it all points to Jesus. So I'm going to pray, and then I'm going to share with you where we're going today. So, Father, thank you for everything that already has occurred, already the responses of people's hearts and lives, and thank you that you're not done, that, Lord, you are just getting started. And so we continue to posture ourselves to receive from you, and Lord, we are in love with you, and I'm thankful that you love us. And Lord, we just want more. In Jesus' name, amen. So, like Phil, I was okay until Viola started sharing, and that ruined me. And I'll tell you what really like hit me the hardest was, please stop. Not stop, you thief. Not stop, you dirty scoundrel. Listen to what I'm saying. That is how I felt God saw me. Was stop, you dirty piece of trash. I want to clean you up. I love you enough to accept you, even though you're kind of broken and dirty. I do want to clean you up. Instead of, I desire you just like you are. And then I'm going to empower you through grace to be something you could never be yourself. So come here. You know, it's like you're valuable, you're loved, those things, never did I feel this way. So yesterday we had our kickoff of Men of Hope back in, I don't know how to put it, our first Men of Hope back together again, if you will. We took a break for a little while and felt like it was time to restart. And everybody that shared, that it was really cool. There was multiple people that shared and were a part of it. I don't see him. I know he's here. But Matt Person came out and did worship, which is always amazing. Is Matt in here? No, it's okay. I'll talk about him. I'm only kidding. I have known Matt Person since he was about 5 years old, I think. Some of you maybe longer, but I've known him since he was at least five, maybe younger than that. But watching him develop and grow into a man of God, watching him find his place and his position and who God has called him to be, and taking all of his unique qualities and his sense of humor and his love for God and his love for music, and not trying to cultivate him to be somebody else, but exactly who God created him to be. And I know he's not the only one. He's who I'm using today as an example. But watching that happen and then seeing him pour out in a way that only Matt can do, I'm just like, I love this. And then Phil Wright, I've known him since he was knee-high to a grasshopper. And, I don't know. I've known him for a couple years. But same thing. Again, watching Phil step into who God is calling him to be and created him to be, and believing that God is calling me and he's drawing me and I'm responding, and not everybody is called to speak publicly or to share necessarily, but and then Matt Adams, I feel honestly like I've known Matt my whole life, even though that's not true, because we have very similar backgrounds, and we both were kind of wrecked by religion for a number of years, and the Lord has freed us time and time, and he's still in process of freeing mindsets and breaking stuff. And I watched him, And I thought, oh, I know exactly what he's going through. He has an hour and a half of stuff he could share that he's got to pack into 5 minutes. And so how do you do that other than just going, oh, wait, and he did a great job, but it's hard for 5 to 7 minutes. Thank you, Austin. And he did a great job, and I'm watching, and then Austin just beautifully weaved it all together, shared the heart of why we were there, and the direction of the heart of God for the men of this house, and then, like Jay said, bringing in Isaac to beautifully just put the bow on the whole package. I mean, I felt like it was just such an amazing experience. But one of the things that Austin, I think it was Austin, said, he said he met a guy recently who made a statement to him like this, that if you're really bad, God's going to send you to hell. And afterwards, I was talking to Austin, and I said, in order for a statement like that to actually be true, that would mean that the opposite of that statement would also have to be true. So a statement cannot be true unless the opposite of it is also true. That's how truth works. So if being bad sends me to hell, then being good gets me to heaven. It's not true. But it's what we believe, at least the first part of that. We all know better than to say, if I'm really good, I get to heaven. But we're not so good at believing that no matter what my behavior looks like, and I'm not justifying sin or trying, I'm just trying to break open something here in our mindset that makes us strive to try to do something that we're not equipped in ourselves to try and make happen. You're never going to do good enough to feel good enough, to feel justified, to feel like God finally loves me now because I did good enough. That's why when Viola said, please stop, you don't understand the value of what you're taking from me. I'll do anything. I'll pay any price. I'm just like, I'm a wreck down here thinking that is exactly what actually, I don't know how else to put this. This is a terrible way to put this, but it was the thing that actually hooked me and brought me into a loving relationship with my Savior, was knowing that he looked at me and he didn't, it wasn't like he was blind to all my stuff and all my baggage I brought with me. It was like he could see to the core of who I was. And he, because he created me, he's like, I know exactly who you are. All that junk that you put on over that isn't who you are. So what I'm calling out is who you are. You're amazing. You're awesome. I love you. You're beautiful. You're wonderful. You're my son. You're my daughter. You understand? And this, to me, is what brought me into a place of going, I want to give my entire life to serving the one who found me. Right? Kick me a couple times and watch what happens. I am not going to be your friend. But put your arm around me and tell me, man, I so appreciate you. You've got a friend for life. You understand? I mean, poor examples, but please just hear what I'm saying. Because it's kind of how we see God, like this ruffian, this judgmental monster that just wants to correct you, fix you. Can I tell you this? Just like any parent, we come to realize sometimes, and it took me much longer than probably most of you that are parents, it took me a long time to recognize that what my kids need is not me to try to fix them, because I can do a really good job of fixing every problem they have. But what they need is for me to love them and encourage them and build them,
call out of them the good things, to draw out of them what God created them to do and be, not what I want them to do and be. Because ultimately what I end up doing is pushing them away when I'm really trying to draw them in. Because I'm trying to control the outcome because I know better. And even though that might be somewhat true, that I might be a little more knowledgeable and have a little more wisdom and understanding than they do, it doesn't help for me to correct and feed on them until they get it. Because what they'll do is they'll pretend like they get it. And then eventually they'll just go, psh, you don't know why. You don't understand me. You don't know me. Yeah. Anyway, not going to go down that road. I got a question for you. What did Solomon ask for from God? God asked him, he came to him in a dream. This is 1 Chronicles chapter 3, and it's also found in 2 Kings chapter 2. But in 1 Chronicles chapter 3, around verse 8 or 9, God comes to Solomon in a dream, and he tells him, I will give you anything you want. What is it that's in your heart? What did Solomon ask for? Okay, and that is true, but not the full picture. He didn't say, God, would you give me wisdom? He said, it depends on what translation you're reading. If you read out of the NIV, it says, God, I desire a discerning heart. This is, again, 1 Chronicles chapter 3. That's about verse 9. In the New King James and the King James, it says that I want an understanding heart, for who can judge these people? They're so plentiful. There's so many of them. He actually asked for this. This is what it actually translates out to. God, I want a heart that hears and obeys you. It's the Hebrew word sama, S-A-M-A. It's an understanding, a hearing, an understanding, an obeying heart. Which translates out to wisdom. If you read it specifically in 2 Kings chapter 1, verse 2, I think it is, it says that he asked specifically for wisdom. But there's a reason why there's differing stories between Kings and Chronicles. I'm not going to get into all that today, but there are reasons why when you read different stories, they sound a little bit different. But if you, it's, again, it's more than just, and I say that very carefully because wisdom is super important. It actually says in, I just read it right now, in the 2 Kings 1, it actually says he asked for wisdom and knowledge, which is great, but it's far greater than, like, I just want to know a bunch of stuff. I just want to, like, understand a lot of stuff. It was, I want to understand you in the depths of who I am, and I want to be obedient to what I hear. This is why this is important. I'm not just throwing out random stuff so I sound smart. This is important because God speaks to the core of who you are about who you are. How he sees you, what he thinks of you, what he created you for, what he believes about you. Every one of us was put on this earth for not only specific reasons, but specific purposes. And our main purpose is to be a son or to be a daughter of the King. Our main goal in life is not to try to accomplish certain things. Because if you accomplish the world but lose your soul, what good is it? So when we are first created, this is not biblical, this is Zach version. See, like this big stamp, the name of God, Jehovah, stamped upon our inner being as mine. You are mine. And we spend our whole life in a battle, in a fight with the enemy trying to convince you you're not enough to be his. And God all the time desiring you to understand at the depth of who you are that he's already called you. So let's go here. Let's go to Genesis chapter 32. Because I'm going to tie something together that I started a couple of weeks ago. I talked to you about Isaac, Jacob, Abraham, Laban, Leah, Rachel, Joseph. I kind of just threw a whole bunch of stuff out there and let it simmer. I'm going to pull one piece out of this, and I feel like much of what I want to share inside of this whole Genesis 24 to 45 is way too big for me to try to cover in 1 or 2 weeks. There's a lot here. I want to pull one thing out of this story that I want you to get in the depths of who you are today. And that's this. In Genesis chapter 32, we find Jacob getting ready to go meet his brother Esau, who he knows, at least he believes, that Esau wants to kill him. He hears that Esau is coming to meet him, and he's got 400 other people with him, and Jacob's thinking, oh no, not good. Jacob divided up his family. He's like, half of you go that way, half of you go that way. He kept a hold of a few people and his wife. His two wives, they camped one night, and then the next day he sent his wife and all their his two wives and all their stuff back across the Jabbok, the river. You go back across, I'm going to stay right here. And it says this, I better turn there. I hope I'm in the right chapter. Okay, because I have no idea what I'm doing right now. Welcome to the carnival that is my brain. Let's start in verse. Darn. Just bear with me a second. We're almost there. There it is. Verse 24 of Genesis 32 says this. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. I'm going to keep reading, but I got a question for you. Was he alone, or was there a man there? Jacob was all alone, and a man wrestled with him. Jacob was all alone, and a man wrestled with him. I would venture to say that Jacob was alone, and a man wrestled with him. That's as far as I'm going to say that one right now. I'll come back to that in just a minute. Verse 25, now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said to him, what is your name? He said, Jacob. And I like this, he said that, there's really, it's kind of ambiguous. He said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have struggled with God and with men, and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked, saying, tell me your name, I pray. And he said, why is it that you ask me my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Going back to verse 24. Jacob was alone, and he wrestled with Israel. I know it doesn't say it that way. I'm not trying to change the word. Just hear my story. Was it possible that what Jacob actually was struggling with was his real identity of how God saw him? Is it possible that what Jacob actually, what caused him to see God face to face was by seeing himself as God saw him, it actually created something in him that made him recognize God's face to face? There is no word for presence or face-to-face in Hebrew. It's actually mouth-to-mouth, breath-to-breath. It is not like this that he's talking. There is no English way to say what is actually happening here. Correct me if I'm wrong. Am I wrong? Like, maybe a little bit, but like, it is, but it's not like the English face-to-face. It's different. The presence is different than it is literally. You could also say mouth-to-mouth. Same type of wording. The word Israel means God prevails, or God prevails. Here's my point in this. Jacob was called to do amazing and great things. He was called to raise up a son named Joseph, which means this: God multiplied. It means God adds, but it literally breaks down to God multiplies. So how does someone who's a trickster, a heel grabber, a person who is, like, I don't know what the other word is I'm looking for, but a trickster, a heel grabber, how does someone like that end up having a son who says God multiplies unless God changes him to be who he was created to be? So I would submit to you that I believe that Jacob wrestled with himself. And I know, listen, not trying to change the story, not trying to make the short circuit on anything. I recognize that there is a battle and a fight in each one of us. And whoever comes out on top, whether it's Jacob the heel grabber or Israel, God prevails, is going to determine the outcome of your life. And if you allow the enemy, this is in each one of us, if we allow the enemy to continue to tell us that we are something we're not based upon something we do, right? Whether that's something dirty and nasty, or whether that's been abused, or whether that's alcohol, or whether that's whatever it might be, if we allow ourselves to be identified by this, we will always fall short in everything we do. We will never come to full potential of what God designed and desires for our life, because we're stuck in this cycle of being yanked on. Anytime the enemy wants to yank our chain and make us think we're less than we are, all he has to do is go, you're stupid. You're a pervert. You're whatever kind of things the enemy throws out there consistently, trying to drag you into this hole and make you feel like you're less than a son or a daughter of the King. It goes completely against God prevailing in our lives. I wish there was an easy way just to absolutely once and for all put to death anything that would rise up and try to convince me that I'm anything less than a son of God. But that's the battle. That, in my opinion, is the ultimate battle of our life continually. Who God says we are consistently. The enemy attacks that. He's been doing it since the garden. Do you want to be like God? Well, too bad you can't be, because he's hiding from you that fruit that would make you more than you actually are, and he doesn't want you to be more than you are. He knows if you eat it, right? And Adam and Eve start going, maybe he's right. Fruit looks good. Right? All the way to Jesus. Did God really say that you're the Son of God? If you really are, then why don't you do these things? Challenging. Wrong person to challenge. But challenging Jesus as to who God says you are. You think you and I are safe from being challenged by who God says we are and who I say I am, or who you say I am, or who your parents say you are, or who you're the world says you are? You know, I had somebody I don't like personally when people ask me like what I do. Not because I'm afraid or ashamed or embarrassed. I'm not at all. But the only reason I don't like it is because immediately we develop ideas, thoughts, and we begin to identify somebody by what they do instead of by who God says they are. Because just because, you know, like Austin, just because you're an F-22 pilot, that's not your identity. I mean, you may love to fly, you may, you know, get a lot of fulfillment out of doing the things that you do, but in the long run, that's not what brings you full fulfillment. Like Ben, if he's known as a Blackhawk pilot and suddenly he has to retire, he doesn't get to fly Blackhawks anymore, what good is he? Dang it. It's like, I've been saying this for years. I don't know. I honestly, when I think about Ben, I do not think helicopter pilot. Because I know him so much deeper than that. And I know so much more about him than that. In fact, there's times I go, oh yeah, he flies helicopters. Or, oh yeah, he can fix anything. Including helicopters. Anyway. Do you understand? Like, or how about if you had somebody who is a homeschool mom? And as much as we want to say, oh, that is, you know, such an amazing thing, and it is, and it's the hardest job, all the things that people say about it, what we're kind of doing is trying to bring value to something that we've identified somebody as instead of saying they're a daughter. They're amazing. They're who God created them to be. They're doing that, sure, but that is not who they are. So much more than that. I'm a dad, and I love my kids, and I would do anything for my children, but I also know that I'm also a son. And so in that, I have to learn how to be a son so I can develop sons. So if I don't even know how to position myself in identity as a son, how can I ever give that away? How can I ever instill that in anybody else aside from punishment, cracking on them, you know, doing whatever, trying to get them to be something that I'm not even myself? So I want to do something. I do recognize it's starting to get a little bit late, but I feel this is important. I brought a garden with me today. I cannot take credit for this garden. I didn't plant it and didn't grow it. But I like it. And this is an opportunity for each one of you to do something. We are getting ready in May to do the teen gala that, I'm going to say it a different way. It's an identity ball disguised as a gala. I really think it is so important. I wish that in a younger age, when I was 16, 17, or even before, but when I was a teenager or before, that I would have had somebody come alongside me and tell me something more that identified me as God saw me, instead of just by what you could see on the surface of what I was dealing with. When I was 17, or whatever age you are when you're a junior, I was put on a list in my high school. I was number two of most likely to commit suicide, which kind of cracked me up because I loved myself way too much to kill myself back then. Right? You knew me. I was, maybe not at that point you didn't know me. You wouldn't want, I was my biggest fan, and I had no desire to kill myself. But there were certain things I was doing and saying and displaying. I was in a lot of trouble. I was angry. I was hurting people. I was drinking more than anyone should, and all of that stuff. And so what somebody started doing was identifying me and some of my friends and some other people as, these are the people most likely to do these certain things, right? And so when I heard about it, it actually made me laugh, but I remember thinking, what am I putting off that would make somebody think that I would want to actually do something like that? And can I tell you this? Never, not ever, to that point, had I ever considered suicide. Ever. Hadn't thought about it, hadn't contemplated it, nothing. It wasn't until after that, that thought became something that became planted in me, that when something, because I went through some really bad stuff when I was a junior in high school, and there was some stuff that came down that I thought I was going to go to prison for, and my first thought was, I'll take the easy way. I'm not going to Canyon City Prison. I will deal with this myself, and I'll be done. And then I went, what the heck? I'm not going to do that. That's stupid. Instead, I'll go to Canada. No. I didn't really think that, but I did go to the Marines, so... It's like going to Canada. okay. Anyway, it's amazing to me how, not even realizing, knowing, not intending, that we plant seeds of identity in people constantly. And even though most people act like they shrug it off like it's no big deal, it's a seed that gets planted that ultimately begins to grow. We become self-conscious about things. We begin to let things, even, like I said, if you stop and think about it, there are things about each one of us, like, and I don't see her in here. God, I really talk about her now. No, Eileen Moss shared her testimony. And somewhere, somehow, the idea that she doesn't have nice feet or whatever turned into, I hate my feet. How? How does that start other than somebody saying something? Maybe this isn't true, but oftentimes it comes from parents joking around playing. Look at your goofy little feet. God, they're so ugly. Never intending to go, I'm going to give you a complex. I'm going to make you feel like dirt. I'm going to make you hate your feet. I promise you, that never, if that's where it came from, that was never the intention. Can I tell you something? I'm as guilty as anybody. I've said things like that to my kids just out of play and jest and playing around, never intending to plant seed of identity. Realizing later, something comes out and I go, oh my gosh, why do you think that? And generally speaking, a teenager's not going to go, well, you remember when I was 7 and you started cracking on me about this mole I have? And, you know, or you remember when you said, throw away the shoes and wear the boxes because my feet are so big? Or remember, you know. I'm glad Ryan's not here because he's someone I have said that to, and that's not nice. That is not nice. And you know, again, he can laugh all of this off, but somewhere, if we're not careful, we grab a hold of those things and they plant seeds in us that begin to identify us, and we begin to hate what we've become because we've allowed a seed of false identity to be planted in us. And again, it generally takes a long time, sometimes years, for that to actually begin to produce something that we go, ugh, I don't like that. My daughter's not in here. So I absolutely adore and love my daughter. I step back sometimes and I think, this is a girl who should never, ever, ever have a doubt about if her daddy loves her or not. I look at Scott with his daughter. There's no reason ever that one of your kids should have or will ever doubt whether their daddy loves them or not. But I'm here to tell you that there are times that I look at my daughter and I think, I can see little insecurities or things that make her wonder, does my dad still love me like he did last week? Or these aren't things she said, but I recognize the signs. And it's like, outside of just being ridiculous, which I kind of am sometimes, but I don't know how to fix that except that I need to call out of her who she is. Not allow her to be identified by an insecurity that was a seed that planted, that brought a false identity that somehow grabbed a hold of, no matter how much love and adoration and stuff I pour out, it doesn't always fix that seed that's been grabbed a hold of. Because I promise you this, how many of you have ever seen Pollyanna? Come on, don't lie. Okay. In the movie Pollyanna, she wears a necklace that has a saying, and it says, if you look for the good in people expecting to find it, you surely will. Or is it bad? Yeah, but was it the bad or the good? Either way, remember what I said about true statements? It's only true if it holds up both directions. So if you look for the bad in a person or a situation, looking to find it, you surely will. So if your identity is wavering at all and you've had a seed planted and you look for that, I wonder if my dad loves me, something happens and it brings assurance like, oh, I knew it, he doesn't. See what just happened right there? He didn't say hello when he walked through the door. He didn't hug me when he left. whatever. And put anything in that place. I'm just using one example. It could be anything. And if you search for it long enough, looking for it to identify you, you will find it. You will absolutely find it, and it'll bring some sort of affirmation to you that is firming up the idea that, yep, that is who I am. See, it just happened. Somebody else said something about my feet. Or somebody else said something about my hair or whatever. That's oftentimes, you know, like, I don't like this or that or whatever, and usually that's what people pick up. Not meaning. So, I went around the world. These flowers that I did not bring, did not grow, did not plant. We're getting ready to do the team gala, and I really, Steve and Rachel, when they do stuff, they go all out. I mean, like, I'm not embarrassed, jealous. I know that's not good either, but like, Sage and I were talking about this the other day, and we recognized that when we did youth ministry, that was one thing we definitely did not do as well as they do. That's what I meant by I'm embarrassed to think about some of the things I did, and then they do things, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're so much better at that than I was. But when they decorate things, and when, I mean, look at these things. I'd have been like, yeah, take it. It's the flower, I promise. It really is. You wouldn't have known what it was. They just do things with excellence and beautiful. And so I really want, when they do this gala, I want the young ladies of this house and anyone that comes that's not part of this house to walk in and feel like, this is for me. Like, are you kidding? Like, this is above and beyond what I ever would have expected someone to do for me. And so, I don't know about you, but I recognize that these things cost money. And we, as a house, we're absolutely willing to sow into that. But I also want to give you opportunity. And here's where the flowers come into this. On each one of those flowers, there's a couple things written. One is about identity. Maybe it's daughter. Maybe it's beautiful. Maybe it's worthy. Maybe, you know, whatever. But on each one of them, there is an identity. And then also, there's a flap on it. Okay, there's no flap. Yeah, just checking. There are petals on the flowers. There's an identity written, and then there's a monetary amount between $1 and $100. And there's only one of each. It's not like there's 100, you know, there's 99 $100 ones and one $1 one. No, it's not like that. There's a dollar amount on each one. 1 to 100. I love it. So, you can take as many or as few as you want. So, in other words, you don't have to feel obligated to take one, is all I'm saying. But you also don't have to feel obligated to only take one. You can take five. I don't care. But here's what we're asking you to do. Whatever flower or flowers that you take, whatever amount is on those, that's what you commit to giving toward the youth ministry. And because I believe it's going to be even more than what the event's going to cost, that's a faith picture that I have for this. So whatever is above and beyond what the event costs will go into sowing into the youth in one way or another. It will go into their account and other events or whatever. Just so you know. So people aren't going, like $7,000 came in. You're going to spend $7,000 on it? maybe. No, I'm just saying. I know. I'm just saying, so that there's no like, what in the world? They're not gonna go. Anyway. But here's the thing. So also, like I said, there's an identity written on there. So we are believing that we are sowing into these teenagers' identity. So we're taking our seed and we're planting that seed, believing for the identity of whatever, and it doesn't have to just be what is on that back of that flower, but that is one thing in particular that the Lord spoke to us about. This is who these girls are. And I'm not trying to leave the guys out of this, okay? You should be there serving these girls. Anyway. And they would. I know they would. I'm seeing somebody text me. Yep, I knew it. I want to pray because I feel like I really don't want there to be any condemnation for anyone who either feels like they don't want to participate in this or feels like they can't, or, no condemnation at all. It's totally okay. The Lord will provide one way or the other, and everything will work exactly the way it needs to. So I'm going to ask Steve and AJ, would you guys grab that table and bring it over here? You're just on the outside, man. That's why I grabbed you. Yeah. Okay. So I want to do two things. Because I don't want to overshadow any of this that's going on, but I also want to give us an opportunity to respond to the Lord. Maybe you feel like you're in a bit of a wrestling match yourself for who God called you to be, and who He created you to be, and who He says that you are. And you feel like there's this thing where you know that this is who God calls you, and this is who God says you are, and this is the blueprint of your life, but you cannot seem to break away from what the world calls you, or what your parents called you, or what your spouse called you, or who knows, whatever it might be. I have to. Kids, can I tell you something? Sorry, I didn't mean to call you kids. You're not kids. Teenagers. Young adults. It is important also what you say, how you treat not only each other, but your parents. And I'll tell you why. There are things that I used to say to my parents when I was your age, that were not nice. And sometimes they were under my breath or as I was running the other way, things like that. But they're still put out there. And they're still in the air, and they still allow for somebody to grab a hold of something and cause. Even as adults, we struggle with insecurities. We struggle with whether you think things about us, whether you feel things about us. We're good at putting on fronts, like, who cares? They can think whatever they want. I know who I am. But it's all seed, and it all goes in. And so just as much as parents, we need to be really careful what we say to our kids and our teenagers and our adult children. We need to all be careful what we say to each other, because it is as important. We have impact in each other's lives based on what we say, what we feel about each other, and we cause things inadvertently in people to struggle. So if you're here today and you're struggling at all with, like, who am I, or what does God think about me, or I know, but I just can't get there, I would like to have the leadership come and be ready to pray for these guys. I'm going to pray and dismiss the service. And you can come and get prayer, but I want to make sure that we grab these flowers. Again, you can take as many or as few as you want. So, Father, thank you. for your word. Thank you, God, for the opportunity that we have to sow into the generation that is an amazing generation, an awesome and a strong generation that is here and now and that are the leaders today, not the leaders of tomorrow, but they are leading today. And so we want to sow into them. We want to call out of them who you call them to be and who you created them to be. We want to sow into that and give generously. And Father, I pray that as we leave this place today, that if we're struggling in ourselves as to how you see us or what you think of us, or if there's that wrestling match going on inside of us, I pray, God, today it would be put to rest and we would step into the identity of who you call us to be. We would leave behind the heel grabber and the trickster, and we would step into the position of God prevailing in our lives. We thank you for all that you're doing. We bless this time, bless this fundraiser that we're doing, Lord, and believing that it's raising up a generation to be who they're created to be. In Jesus' name, amen. You're dismissed. If you need prayer, you can come. If you want to come grab